What's up, fight fan? You're listening to MMA Daily, the podcast where we bring you the latest in the world of mixed martial arts. It is Monday, July 31st, 2023, and this week's episode, Gaethje earns the title of BMF. We'll recap an insane weekend of mixed martial arts, a lot going on in UFC, a lot happened in Bellator, we'll talk about all of it, and we'll preview this coming weekend's combat sports events. We got two big ones. The UFC returns to Nashville, and Jake Paul finally fights Nate Diaz in what is expected to be a huge fight. My name is Gabriel Gonzalez, and I'm joined by my co-host, Natalie Zamudio.
Double G. I was just looking up. I thought to myself, how much are they going to charge me for this Jake Paul pay-per-view? $59.99, Double G.
Including on Fight TV?
Why, is it usually cheaper there? Isn't it the same price everywhere?
Isn't it like a little bit of a, what's it called? Like, if you have a subscription, isn't it cheaper? Or am I, I'll be honest.
Is it DAZN? No.
It's on both.
Fight TV used to just be like straight regular pay-per-view price. Let's see. I'm sure everyone wants to listen to me Google searching this price.
Yeah, no.
Let's keep going and
we'll look it up.
I'll tell you.
But yeah, I might be wrong. I'll be honest. I know a lot of people have it. I don't particularly use it just because usually I'm getting a lot of my stuff, my content is focused on other stuff, so I never really get into it. But to talk about, obviously, this weekend, Saturday, UFC 291, a lot of fans, I will say, I felt like you could feel the anticipation a little more, and I touched on it. As nice as it is having, your Bo Nickel and guys like that at 290 on 4th of July, there is so much nostalgia for this past Saturday's card with, so many veterans who have headlined events, pay-per-views, win streaks, what have you. I think collectively, it was just like, you've been invested and you've been on the ride with these guys for a long time. And I think the fans responded to that. Not just, the BMF and all this, because I'll be the first to tell you right now, much as I acknowledge that Dustin and Justin are bad mofos, mm-hmm. I wouldn't say that they had that perfect chemistry the way Nate and Jorge did a couple years ago. So I think the fact that the fans reacted this way was because collectively the card was very good. When everything else, Spence Crawford and all that, kind of was a whole different thing. Top heavy and what have you.
Yeah.
So to get into this fight, first of all, I thought it was a great capstone to the entire card, which had plenty of highlights. But Dustin versus Justin, Poirier comes out really good in the first round. And if you watch their first fight back and a lot of breakdowns, it was really similar, just catching Justin Gaethje in those moments, off of the leg kick, shot selection was just on. I thought defense was pretty good. Look, Justin Gaethje comes to scrap, and even Dustin Poirier didn't make it look easy. But the fact is, I thought that Dustin was, at the end of the day, leading that dance through the first 5 minutes, getting plenty of fist-to-face on Justin. He acknowledged it felt like, hey, if I put on the gas a little bit, I might even be able to do a little more damage, maybe catch him in that one. But he said, look, patience. You're in there with a dangerous guy. Don't rush it. Come second round, a lot more of the same. Dustin's moving. They're getting some shots off, but they're still kind of simmering. And then Gaethje, with what I've heard called the Salt Lake City head kick now, same as Leon Edwards, same kind of setup. Throws the hand out there. Poirier's kind of looking to block a punch. Isn't really thinking about that right head kick wrapping around. Cracks him, wraps around the head. Perfect timing. That's all she wrote. Justin goes in for the kill shot. Herb Dean comes in with the people's elbow. I thought he was kind of sliding, like he was trying to get it to home base before the pitcher catches the ball. Instead, yeah. I saw it was a bit of a slip. Fact is, one shot necessary, walk off, Gaethje backflips before Herb Dean even sits back up. Beautiful finish. What about you?
Yeah, I mean, that's the perfect recap there. the sliding into home plate. I thought it was a slide. I didn't realize he had slipped. But yeah, Dustin felt the impact of that. When Gaethje was doing his backflip, I mean, the guy is so aware, spatially aware, that like he managed to not land on Diaz. I'm sorry, on Poirier by like, I don't know, a foot, if that. And then spun right around and went off to the other side. That guy is really special. But I saw the first round still, even though Dustin had success, like for me, he had about a minute's worth of pure domination, right? When he hurt Gaethje's eye and he was landing all kinds of punches. But around otherwise, the 4 minutes before and after, you know, the 3 minutes before that and the last minute after that, I felt like Gaethje was ahead. You know, he wasn't doing a whole lot, but he was landing leg kicks and landing some hard shots, and he's kind of like that awkward plodding style that he has, and his head movement is so unorthodox, but it's still very effective. His evasion and his striking. That being said, Poirier's defense is just beautiful, man. It's so slick. And so even though Gaethje was landing shots, they were at the end of Dustin's defensive movement away from the punch. He had his elbow out. So in any case, whether you had it for Poirier or Gaethje that first round, it was a great first 5 minutes. And it had me nervous for Gaethje, right? Because Dustin kept throwing that body kick and Gaethje was leaning down into it. It made me think of Cormier Jones when, you know, when DC was winning that fight and then he dipped down like he always does, and Jones caught him right in the face. So that's what I was worried about. It seemed like Mike Brown, you know, in Poirier's corner was looking at that as an opportunity to take advantage of. He's like, you know, he's dipping. The knee's right there. So the story for me coming into the second round was, Gaethje better watch out. Now, I didn't forget that he had landed two head kicks on Poirier in round one, but even though it was surprising and, you know, unexpected, Poirier walked right through him. So the last thing I was looking for is Poirier to get knocked out with a head kick. I was looking for Gaethje to try and not get knocked out by a knee or a kick from Poirier. Freaking surprise of the last few months as far as, you know, main events go. It was a beautiful win, man. And, you know, last week we talked about the heart versus head pick. We both wanted Gaethje to win, and we picked him, but there was that voice in the back of our heads that was saying, yeah, but it's Dustin Poirier, and yeah, he's probably going to win it, but we're still going to pick Gaethje. We were right for sticking with our heart pick. So I was happy to see that amazing victory. Jorge Masvidal looked so sad to have to give that belt to Gaethje. They didn't even make eye contact. He just kind of like, you know, placed it over his shoulder and walked away.
Yeah, isn't it? That was
That was a
you could
tough one,
just
man.
feel it, like
Yeah, you could
just
feel it.
sucking
And
the
Gaethje didn't
lemon.
even, you know, I think it was like a respect thing. Gaethje was like, I'm not going to even try to, you know, make friendly chatter with you. Like, I know you're butthurt about this. So just give me the belt and
And I
that's
think
it.
there's that acknowledgement, like, you know, they've been teammates a long, long time at ATT, Jorge and Dustin. So
Right.
I think there was just a lot of emotion that came out. I did watch an interview. Jorge gave Gaethje his props, and, you know, he didn't shy away from it, said, no, he's a BMF, and there ain't no disrespect there. There ain't no bad blood there. But obviously, he wanted it for Dustin more than anything. And what else can you say? Great performance. I guess let's touch on it a little bit. Dustin Poirier, I don't know if you saw his post-fight press conference,
Yes.
but when you talk about the future, he was like, I'm not excited about fighting the up-and-comers, and I take that to assume, you know, the Fazeevs, the Armin Sarukians, the maybe the Jalen Turners of the world. He said that just doesn't excite me at this stage of his career. Which kind of begged the question, well, where do you go next if you're Poirier? Said this was his best weight cut ever to 155. I mean, when you look at some of those guys at 170, I don't know if I know there's obviously the Colby fight is always there for Dustin, but outside of that, I don't know how much I like a lot of those fights stylistically. I think that He's a 55er. I think he's a strong, elite 55er. So this kind of begs the question, what do you think we would see next for Dustin Poirier?
That's a tough one, man, because, even he doesn't know. I do like the idea of the Colby Covington fight, and Colby Covington isn't a huge 170-pound guy, so that sort of evens out there. They'd sort of be a similar size playing field. And then there's the story, ATT, Masvidal, this is a great, it's a grudge match, right? Even though they've never been in the same weight class. So I would love to see that. And I think that Poirier could perform better against Colby than, an aging Masvidal was able to, for as much as he was emotionally, desperate to beat Colby Covington. Poirier, I think, would be able to be more composed and has just a better all-around skill set. So I like that fight a lot. At 155, I have no clue who's worth fighting, man. I agree with him, and I know Conor McGregor was trying to insert himself as always. He's like the pesky aunt that's showing up at your house or calling for holidays and for birthdays, and your mom makes you get on the phone with her even though you don't want to talk to her. And it's like, yeah, all right, Conor, yeah, okay, you want to fight this guy now? Sure, we got
It's an A plus metaphor or simile.
it.
Sorry if I do say so myself.
Yeah.
Like I said, the Colby fight's kind of always there. It's kind of like Valentina and Amanda 3. It's always there. I look at it. I see guys, and I know some of these guys are booked when I name them, but like Sarukian, Gamrot, Fazeev, Beneil Dariush, obviously. Renato Moicano, Jalen Turner, Grant Dawson. It's like I saw this, a little bit, and Ariel Helwani brought it up, and I say this more or less because I know he's got such a big voice. But when he interviewed Dustin Poirier before the BMF stuff, he asked him a thing like about like, oh, does it bother you? Because like Michael Chandler got the big opportunity, and you beat Michael Chandler, and it's like, are we revising history that? Are we forgetting that Dustin Poirier got two fights with Conor McGregor and whooped butt twice in like 6, 7 months? Like, are we acting like Dustin Poirier did not get to do these things or something? And why do I bring that up? Is because I think it's very easy to say a narrative like, oh, well, Dustin did this and now he's here. And it's like, Dustin has gotten to enjoy such great success. I personally am disappointed he didn't get his custom hot sauce fight shorts. I think that would have been great branding, but I digress. My point of this is that Dustin Poirier is one of the biggest non-champion draws that the UFC has. And I thought it was a perfect pairing, him and Gaethje. I thought with the card they had, I had no issues with the price tag. We talk about it as a fan. Do you feel like you're getting your money's worth every month and all this? Whether or not you buy them all, or if you only buy a few a year. I was happy with the card on Saturday, regardless of the fact that we didn't have that, battle for supremacy, number one, number two in a division. I bring that up because I do think that Dustin still has a lot of fight in him. I think he's still a top 55er. If he decides, I've done all of this, I can retire into the sunset. I beat a superstar twice. I was in there with the best. I did my thing. Some nights it didn't go my way, others it is what it is. If he's good with it, okay. I think there's still fight out there left for him. I don't think it's out of the question that should Makhachev reign supreme, that beating a Gamrot and a Dariush could get him back there. Let's say Makhachev beats, for example, Charles, and then Gaethje. If Volk isn't around, is Poirier still right there in a fight or two? Yeah, and he's still—I still think those are very winnable fights for him. He's still at a high level, but once again, it comes down to what does he want to do. And so there we are. Hey, what about this? Let me ask you: Poirier versus Volkanovski—is
I
that a
was just
bad
gonna
fight?
say that, man. I was gonna say, would this be crazy? That's the one I want to see at 55, yeah.
Because I would argue this, if Volk doesn't fight Ilia, I don't want to see him back in a title fight. I think him versus Poirier would be perfect.
Yeah, he shouldn't fight Ilia. Like, That guy's great, but like you're
I want
still
the
not.
Ilia fight, though. No,
I
I
don't
get
care
you.
about him.
I
And
get you. I get you.
yeah, Poirier Volk, if he must at 155, Poirier Volk. If he wants to 170, Colby. And then that'll. I feel like there's not much left for you to do after that. You know, like you can just kind of wait until something more enticing comes or not. Like I think Poirier's done it all. I mean, he said it himself. I won already in life, you know, and so all this is just icing, basically. So,
Yeah, I get what you're saying for sure. I get what you're saying. I think it's you really got to think about what it means for, I guess, longevity now, because it's like, okay, now is it dangerous fights, high risk, low reward, and only he knows how he really feels about that at this stage. But yeah, to go back to it, I really do feel like he needs to be given his flowers in some way for where he's at. Like, if Bryce Mitchell has camo shorts, why can't Poirier get some hot sauce? The same way with Max Holloway. I'm sorry, but some Hawaiian shorts I think would be great. And I always go
Yeah.
back to it, this acknowledge that you have a star on the card. And I'm not saying every fighter should get this, even because they have good branding. Jalen Turner, love him. Don't know if I would say he's the next man up to get custom shorts with spider webs on them, you know what I mean?
Yep.
But Poirier, with what he's done in the game, with the Holloway, I feel like that would be a really cool element, but I digress. But I say this because I still want to see Dustin Poirier out there. Now, to keep going with everything, Justin Gaethje. He's the next man up after Charles Oliveira. He did say before the fight, he wasn't expecting to turn it around even if he beat Poirier quickly. Said hard camp, need to recover the body. It's about 2.5 months ish till the Abu Dhabi card. Now, he did say if UFC throws me a lot of money, maybe we'll talk, which is what I expected. You know, it's like they throw no big enough bag. I'm pretty sure he'll have Trevor Whitman put him in the ice box in Colorado, do a 9 week camp. Let's get it done, you know? Wouldn't hate it. Just because we've kind of been over this, I kind of wanted someone fresh for Makhachev, if I'm being honest. Just because he's doing so well, I want to see how far he could take it. He said he's not interested in being the backup. If something were to happen, and I don't put this energy out there, but hypothetically, if something were to happen soon to Charles, I could see Gaethje getting the nod. If not, now we have this other element. We know how bad Gaethje wants the belt. Conor McGregor threw this out there, like you said, and I didn't want to jump the gun on it. But, you know, hey, Chandler's out, Gaethje, you're in, let's do this December. Which, not for nothing, is a nice 2 months further than Abu Dhabi. Maybe a good enough amount of time for Gaethje to recover. So I want to ask this to you. He's expected to have to wait for Makhachev, either way. Is the money, is that potential payday, and quite bluntly, I favor him so much in that fight. Is that opportunity worth it to potentially change course, UFC included, from McGregor Chandler to McGregor Gaethje?
Yeah, bigger up, more eyeballs for sure. As far as fight night, right? McGregor versus Gaethje is going to generate the bigger numbers than McGregor Chandler. And not to knock Chandler, like even though they did the tough thing. Man, did that fall off my radar fast or what? I mean, I was so excited for this tough before when it first started, only to find out that they haven't changed. We talked about this already. They haven't changed a darn thing about it. And Conor McGregor is just like cringing it up. And then his, NBA shenanigans and his brand, his name right now is just so like, I don't know what to make of him right now. That's a whole other podcast, right? So in any case, because I think McGregor Chandler tough didn't really pop. Yeah, I think Gaethje is the bigger fight, but Gaethje himself, if you watch the press conferences, like I don't want to fight anyone on steroids, which is freaking hilarious. So, and even if, like, what would the timing be for this? If they were, if Magic Mirror, if they were to do this. Day
You
two
mean
was very.
December's the one that's been thrown around a lot. I'm gonna just say it. I think that UFC and everyone is taking their time. I think that the only thing stopping McGregor from fighting in December is if McGregor doesn't want it. There's no worry about USADA. He'll get an exception. He's too big a star not to get an exception. If you think that there's something going on where USADA would prevent McGregor from fighting in December, that's tinfoil hat. If McGregor wants December, he will fight in December. Let's make it clear. If for some reason there is something going on behind the scenes, I don't know, money, I don't know, maybe he wants to, they think Roadhouse is going to be a hit and he's going to do the sequel too. I don't know. But I think the only thing stopping McGregor from fighting in December is McGregor. And I think that that would be the expected timeline. I think that's why they haven't made serious moves any other direction for another fight on that card. Title fight, I mean.
Do you think Chandler was like nervous when he saw Connor tweeting like, screw Chandler, I want Gaethje?
Oh God, of course.
He's like, damn
Yes. How could you
it.
not be? Come on.
Yeah.
You know what? Okay, we talked about that with Tough, and I'm like, I'll be honest. They simmered, they never cooked and popped off, did
Right.
Connor and Mike. They had that one shove, and besides that, it's just been Connor silliness and
Yeah.
Chandler being, he's a very even keeled guy, which I'm
Right.
sure is absolutely pleasant. I've talked to him, really nice guy in person. I can't say that's made for the most exciting reality show. And I'll leave it at that. Now, there's like 2 weeks left of the season, if I'm not mistaken. Like, not including the finale that they're gonna add on a fight night, the undercard. However, we do have this question. Natalie, I hate to say it. I think I jinxed it. Remember I said we're gonna get to the very last episode and they're gonna like give you the date of the fight during the end credits?
Yep.
I swear, I feel like they're about to do that. They might announce it like a little bit before on Twitter, Okamoto or something, but I really do feel like that's what they're about to do. To go back to the Gaethje of it all, proved he's a BMF. He is really awesome. He's a fan favorite. I do think that he has to take that offer of the money seriously. But I think that you have to establish how much pay-per-view points. Am I first on the poster? How much testing do you want McGregor to actually prove before you take the fight? Chandler doesn't care. Chandler says, give me Connor juiced. If he's makes 55, I don't care. Not that 185-pound McGregor that we saw on IG several months ago. But my point of that is that like Gaethje would probably say, I don't care if he has an exception, you test him more if you want me to fight. Chandler doesn't care. I think that's something that would come up, but in my heart, I think Gaethje feels like McGregor would always be there for him. The belt, you only get a couple more tries, maybe.
That's
He may
true.
feel this is my last one. I'm waiting for Makhachev and to have that in my legacy. There you go.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's the smart move, right? Why risk anything against fighting Connor, who, yeah, you'll get money and eyeballs, but it doesn't do anything for your legacy. And at this point, I don't think it does. Because he's already, Connor's just getting beat up by everybody now. So, yeah, if what you're looking for is glory, true glory, that's UFC gold.
Yeah, and hey, like I said, money talks. It's easy for me to say these things. Every now and then it's like, oh, I'm down. It's like, what? It's like, all right, let's do it then, I guess, right? So, hey, watch. We could see it happen. Oliveira's out, Gaethje in versus Makhachev, and I'm like, well, that's all that 15-minute segment down the drain.
Delete.
Anyway, co-main event in the light heavyweight division, Jan Blachowicz, Alex Pereira. I'm going to get through this one quick because it felt very straightforward, but Blachowicz comes out strong, looks to grapple, looks to really, make Pereira feel the elevation, the weight, the size, etc. By the way, Alex Pereira looking like a solid light heavyweight, 20 pounds. He looked all of it, Second round, a little more of the same. I thought that Blachowicz was having a very decent round on the feet. I thought that as much as Pereira was getting shots in, I actually thought, is Blachowicz beating Pereira on the feet? Gets a takedown, isn't as, doesn't have it, doesn't stick the landing as much. Pereira works back to his feet, and Blachowicz just looks gassed. And it looks like Pereira runs out of time, to be honest, at the end of that second round. Blachowicz survives. Very close round. I think that's the source of the split decision. Go to the third. Pereira's doing well, not as dominant. Blachowicz gets enough of a second win to kind of hold off the onslaught, so to speak, but he's still losing the dance. Late takedown, doesn't convert anything with damage in the last minute. Goes to the scorecards. Split decision, Alex Pereira. Okay. I personally, we've had much worse calls, much closer calls. At first, I thought 1 and 2, Blachowicz, he's going to get it done. I don't hate the Pereira decision. What about you?
I thought the same as you, 1 and 2. I thought Blachowicz won the first 2 rounds. And then even the third round, like it wasn't a total blowout. So despite him being gassed, the elevation, having, burned all his energy in that first round, wrestling, as DC said, he's not a wrestler, so he can train all he wants, but he just doesn't have the gas tank of a wrestler. So yeah, I thought Blachowicz won. He thought he won. It is what it is. I don't know what you can do about it. I think I'm guessing because he was breathing heavily that the judges just saw it incrementally more so for Pereira from rounds 2 and 3. And so that's kind of a bummer for Blachowicz. Not kind of, that's a big bummer. But it's pretty impressive for Pereira to go from, middleweight champ, losing the belt, fighting the former champ at 205 and beating him on paper. That's like a fast track. He's already been on the MMA fast track and he's just continuing that fast track route, man.
Yeah, I mean, look, he's obviously been doing really well. He's, like you said, the fast track. I think one thing's of his appeal, he's a very refreshing breath of fresh air in those divisions that respectfully maybe feel like really needed some new blood at 185 and 205. It's kind of been, two, three guys really running the table at the top of both of those. Then this really awesome kickboxer and I love his whole thing with the bow and arrow and really embracing, that the jungle village roots, for want of a better way to explain it. I mean, he's posted about it. You see him in the tribal paint and all that. I think it's great. And so I think that's a big part of his appeal and why people have been captivated by his run. And not for nothing, he's got that touch of death with the left hand, which, by the way, Blachowicz took well. I want to point that out. Blachowicz didn't seem to mind throwing hands too much in there, so I think that is something to watch as Pereira continues at 205. He's a great striker, but does he still have, the kiss to the Shadow Realm in the knuckles at 205? And let's talk about this. I'm gonna just say it right now. I don't know if UFC is going back to Brazil for a pay-per-view in January, but if they are, I think the timetable is now perfect. Pereira, Jiří. Vacant title right there. What about you?
Yeah, I like that. I mean, that's it sucks for the people who had to suffer injury, Jamal Hill, in order for this potential matchup to come to the surface, but that's what makes the most sense right now. Jiří's back. Pereira's a big name because of what he did at 185 and his career in kickboxing. He looked good. Not great, but looked good. And like I said, I got the win on paper, so I'm all for that matchup for sure.
I just don't know that, like, I don't know what's up with Magomed Ankalaev. I don't know if he's having issues with the UFC behind the scenes, because I know he was a little perturbed about everything, the way it all played out in December after the draw and all that. I know that guys have said they were offered him and he wasn't training, wasn't ready, wasn't going to be able to get ready in time for the dates they were looking for. So I don't know. And I don't know if he's doing a little bit of gamesmanship, saying, let the cards land a little more and see if a more immediate better opportunity, better matchup materializes. But yeah, outside of him, Johnny Walker is on his way up, but I don't see that one happening quite yet. So I do think that it's the perfect setup. You have a stylistically exciting fight with Pereira and Jiří. You have a great venue for it if they go to Brazil. Let's be real, that fight is so good. If they put it in Vegas, wouldn't hate it. I think you could make that fight anywhere and it's gonna draw. So I think it's just great. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, no notes. I think we know this is the fight and the timetable. Jiří needs more time. Alex obviously just fought. Let's go. Give him a minute and let's set it up. Obviously some finishes. My man back in action, pants off and all. Derek Lewis takes out Marcos Rogério de Lima. They weren't even the prelim headliner. Moves to third from the top on the pay-per-view, and I thought that was the best move that could have happened. With respect to everything with Steven Wonderboy and Michel Pereira, I thought it was great. Jumping knee in front of Masvidal in the opening seconds, loved it. Just kind of wails on him. Says his cardio felt great in the elevation. Had been there for 2 weeks. Gets the finish. Does the full pounds the chest, does the beast thing on the mat, takes off his shorts, takes off his cup, did everything but say my balls were hot again. No notes. What about you?
As John Anik said, more souvenirs for the Mormons.
Oh
So
God, what? I
he
couldn't. I'm not
literally
gonna
said
lie. I
that.
couldn't believe John said
I
that.
know. Like John Anik. Man, I mean the UFC was probably thanking their lucky stars that Derek Lewis, that this was the moment he chose to put it all together and come back with an awesome victory and in a totally unexpected fashion. And so, they were, I'm sure, disappointed to lose the Wonder Boy fight, as I was to see it moved or to be canceled. But Derek Lewis showed up big time for the UFC, for the pay-per-view, for the fans in Utah, for the fans on TV. We've been watching Derek Lewis since the beginning of his UFC career. He's always displayed a shocking amount of athleticism, right? Like every once in a while, he would throw a switch kick, and you're like, what? I didn't know he could do that.
Right?
And I feel like we've seen him try the jump knee, the flying knee before, but this was completely unexpected, especially considering his recent record. But I mean, he said it best himself. I was like, I'll just try that. Try it, see what happened. It landed right down the middle, boom, boom, boom. I mean, he was celebrating in the cage longer than he was fighting in the cage, and the way he celebrates, that makes it a treat for fans. Just a joy to see that whole start to finish, the interview with Joe Rogan, like everything. He's a killer, but he's also seems to be like a gentle giant too. And there's something really cool about someone that size with those abilities that can also be sweet and tender and funny. So I just love that guy.
Yeah, no notes on that one. He did say he's a free agent. UFC wants him. He wants UFC. I want him in UFC. I'm gonna say this. Outside of Stipe, is there somebody he hasn't fought at heavyweight off the top of your head? I mean, and mind you, there's new.
Tuivasa? Oh no, he fought Tuivasa, yeah.
Mind you, there's new guys like Jilton Almeida. Obviously, is still working his way up. But really, like you look at his record, Ngannou, Blades, Spivak, Pavlovich, Tuivasa, Volkov. Honestly, like, so here's my point of this. There's always going to be fights for Derek that people are going to love, for sure. So, love to see him on a stage like this, where I know the fans are excited about the event. And they're going to appreciate it, and he adds to it, and he gets the love. I love all of that. Let me make it clear. I acknowledge right now there is a big, scary knockout artist in the PFL that is looking for a dance partner. And he's making sure his opponent gets no less than 2 million with the potential for more. And as much as I love Derek Lewis and UFC loves Derek Lewis and Derek Lewis loves UFC, I don't think you can just discard the possibility that that kind of money is going to talk to him and he should consider it. What about you?
Absolutely. The $2 million. Would the UFC be forced to match that offer?
No, they're not obligated anyway whatsoever.
So, because, I'm not so clear on the contract, but sometimes there's like this thing where the promotion, like what happened with Kayla Harrison, right? On the flip side, that's not the situation Derek Lewis is in. He doesn't have to
Oh, like
wait 30
matching
days.
rights?
Yeah.
You know what? That's a good question. So here's the thing. The matching rights is a very odd thing because remember, you can just wait out your matching period. Now, what that means is you're not getting paid by anybody for a while.
Right.
However, you can, like, let's say your matching period is 6 months. You could come to a fighter at 6 months, 1 day, and the previous promotion has no obligation. They can make you another offer, but matching and all this doesn't become a thing. So, and also, I hate to say it, but I think UFC would only see it as the other way around. Like, someone else can match us, but we're not going to match other people. Either you want to be here or you don't. And to the thing you alluded to earlier, when you've been on a bit of a skid, as much as people love Derek, and like I said, everyone loves Derek, it's a great relationship with UFC. If Derek Lewis says he wanted to leave, UFC, while they lose a star, you're not losing a guy who was the number one contender. You get what I'm saying? The way, look, some of these, if I'm not mistaken, Tai and both Sergeys got him in the first round. So, once again, here's my thing about it. I think it comes down to the PFL and their future they want for Derek. I think Derek is getting paid very well by UFC. I'm not saying he's making champ money. He probably doesn't get pay-per-view points unless he's the main event. But I would expect that a guy like Derek Lewis, particularly after this one, he had a good contract. They're going to offer him a good contract. And now you have to weigh your options. Is a one-time payday enough? Is that what I want more at this stage of the game? Or do I want a little bit of the job security? Because UFC, even if he loses a couple more, wouldn't cut him. He's just too popular. PFL, maybe you beat Ngannou, maybe you don't. And then what?
And then what?
You got paid once well, and then it's like, do you like the tournament? Is $1 million a year, maybe? Let's say in the neighborhood of three. Let's say they give him a contract to compete in the tournament or something. Or rematch Ngannou, you make another decent payday. I don't know. But the fact is, it's like, is that what you want at this stage? And I don't know if I have an answer for that. I think he should consider it. I'm sure PFL considers it. But then also, if you look at the big picture, PFL may see it as, we don't want, what's it called? Much as we like the fight objectively, maybe we want the potential to build up our Henan Ferreira, Denis Goltsov, Ante D'Elia, our own homegrown heavyweights. Maybe we want that as opposed to, oh, we're bringing in the UFC guys and it seems like we don't have the talent in-house to compete with Ngannou. I could see that business decision being made too, you know what I mean?
I mean, they might have the conversation, but there's no way
I
they
don't
would
think they
favor.
outdraw the two, I'll say that.
Yeah, no, they wouldn't favor building up their own guys against Ngannou. At the expense of that one main event fight with Derek Lewis versus Ngannou, Ngannou Lewis 2, basically. The amount of money they'd get up front for doing that versus, building up their other guys, like the payoff is too good to do Derek Lewis. Man, this could be interesting.
I know, right?
All this excitement about will, what's the PFL gonna do? You'll probably just end up with UFC, but look, if I'm Ngannou, and it seems like he has sway and there's mutual respect there, if I'm Ngannou, I'm like, do whatever you can to get him. Fury, 2023, Lewis, 2024, like that's a good year for the brand Francis Ngannou, and that only serves to benefit PFL. So
And I'll leave it at this. I know the first fight is, you know, look, it didn't, it wasn't good.
Right, yeah.
I have zero, okay. There's no way that happens twice.
Correct.
I know people are gonna say that it's gonna be a talking point if they were to fight. It's not gonna happen twice. A lot of things gotta go wrong for that to happen twice. Ngannou was in a weird spot. Derek admitted he was really hurt, and we got that travesty of a fight. A lot of things gotta go wrong for that to happen twice. I think the second fight would be more what we expected, particularly with the pressure to perform with what would be a seminal fight for PFL, right? So that's my last thing I'll say about it. But like I said, Derek Lewis probably wants to go back to UFC, but it's like the bag's right there, dude. You know how often does a $2 million bag come up? Not often. Just saying, you know. Get the angels and the demon on your shoulder and start talking. Look, obviously, you know, quite the night. Bobby Green gets the better of you know, Tony Ferguson. That was a rough one. Tony talked about the eye poke and all that, impairing his vision early. Bobby with, you know, decided he wanted to get a finish, subs him late in the third. Is what it is. Tough for Tony, good for Bobby. That was a fun fight. Kevin Holland really throttles Michael Chiesa. First round submission, just a solid performance. Gabriel Bonfim on the undercard got a good finish. Miranda Maverick kicked off the card with a good finish. What were your thoughts overall on the night?
Well, you know what? The main thing apart from BMF was Gate. Oh, sorry, Tony Ferguson. Like, I don't need to. You know, everyone's feeling the same thing, I think, right? It's like when you see a boxing match, and you know, boxers are training boxing since, you know, 6, 7 years old, 8 years old, and so their instincts, it's just baked in them, right? And if they're hurt, their body still dodges punches. Their defense is still, you know, firing because it's so ingrained in them. And that's kind of like how Tony was moving in the cage. So he was still slipping punches and doing his spins and all the footwork that he's just baked into his brain. But there was nothing else behind that. It was just all instinct. Even on the ground, he did his, you know, he used to his Willy Wonka roll, right? He's like rolling. But nothing could be, he couldn't capitalize on any of that baked in instinctual movement because it's just not all there anymore. And that's fine. You know, he's almost 40 years old. No one's gonna have it all put together like they used to at that age, you know, athlete, fighter or not. It sucks to watch, but it's the harder part is because is for me is because he's to me still seems so convinced that there's a chance, and it's just one more fight or two more fights, and he's gonna, you know, get back on top. That's the hardest part. You know, not that his abilities have decreased because that's expected. It's just the delusion, I guess, frankly, is what it is. So we'll see what happens, what the UFC thinks about it, how they're gonna match him up, if they feel like they still should. I'm thinking this is sort of reminding me a little bit of BJ Penn at the very end of his UFC career.
Oh, that breaks my heart hearing you say that.
Well, I mean, that's,
Is it, no, I completely get it. He's, what is this, 5, 6 in a row? It done. I know what I'd be saying if it wasn't a fan favorite. I could tell you that. Tony Ferguson is the type of guy to be your favorite fighter when he's on a skid like this. I think that's the love he gets from the fan base. But yeah, the numbers are what they are, right? I acknowledge that. I completely get it. I thought he, you know, I look at his record. I mean, look who he lost to. Gaethje, Charles, Beneil. I
I
mean,
know.
Nate Diaz. Nate had a full camp. Tony was training for someone else on probably 6 to 5 weeks' notice. I mean, it's not everything in context, but man, what can I say, right? I get it. I get it, plain and simple.
And you know, remember Chandler, he was beating Chandler up.
Oh yeah, I mean, we
He
haven't even
still
gone
looked
into
great
that.
there, except, you know, for that lucky head kick. Another head kick from a 155er who said they never practiced that in training, and
Oh my gosh,
they
yeah.
just whatever. But in any case, you know, he was still looking really good against a man who had fought for the belt, was fighting the top guys too. He was beating them. So it's just, you know, age and damage to the head, like, you know,
Oh yeah.
nothing lasts forever.
I mean, remember the Pettis fight? You can only have so many of those bangers before it starts to, you know. Robbie
Yeah, and
Lawler,
the
case
Gaethje
in
fight, he
point.
was like short
Yeah.
circuiting in the cage. He was like, so, and the eye poke, it really did affect him. You could tell. Even at the end of the fight, he was squinting. So,
Yeah.
not trying to write the man's eulogy, but it didn't look good.
No, very fair. Obviously, there'll be something to watch if they were to book him again. Like I said, solid night, loved it. Saturday had a bit of everything. Terence Crawford, I mean, just really handled it with Spence Jr. Ninth round TKO. Saw the finish. Man looked like a guy who wanted to let everyone know he was the best in the world. Good for him. Great fight. I didn't like how it ran concurrently with UFC, but is what it is. They had quite the thing. I saw they had like a red carpet. People were talking to Chance the Rapper, and I was like, dude, this is a. I think that it went under the. I know fans knew the fight was good. I don't think fans realized how big the pageantry was for the week in boxing. I thought that was sad because. And I think maybe this is just a testament how split the fan base is with so much combat sports. Then to talk about Bellator during the week. So Adrian McKee forced out of the fight with a staph infection. Rising champion Roberto de Souza steps up. They make it a catch weight, but he gets put into the Grand Prix in Japan. Then Patricio Pitbull, Patricky's younger brother, the featherweight champion who just tried to get the bantamweight title from Sergio Pettis, he steps in on a few days' notice, catchweight fight to fight Chihiro Suzuki, another Ryzen guy. Natalie, this was the. I gotta say, I didn't know what to make of this whole turn of events, and I'm gonna just say it. I think one of the biggest things that helped Bellator was there was so much UFC focus that it flew under the radar. I'm sure a lot of fans didn't even. It didn't even register, probably.
Yeah.
But, I mean, just what are your thoughts? Because not for nothing, so Patricky takes Souza out in like, I think it might have been, what was that, like a couple minutes of the first round? Let me take a look at that. Anyway, I just had it written down and hold up. Da-da-da-da-da. Yeah, TKO in the second round. I mean, if you look at it, it seemed like, you know, he wasn't breaking a sweat. Kyoji Horiguchi, fighting for the inaugural flyweight title, accidentally eye pokes his opponent in 30 seconds and they make it a no contest. And then, not for nothing, Patricio Pitbull, your Bellator goat, on short notice gets stopped in the first round also in like a minute 30.
Was he just there? Like, was he just there for his brother? And they were like, "Oh, you, can you fight too?"
Okay,
Like,
so can I a little you know, speculation? So, okay, AJ McKee is out. I don't know if they felt like they had a good backup. Like they had Taufik for the Ryzen card, who was obviously fought in the Grand Prix also, but I think there was a little bit of I don't know. I think they felt like they didn't have a main event now. Like they were gonna like they had to step up for the whole Bellator Ryzen pageantry. Like Patricky AJ was a big fight. Let's say that. AJ McKee's one of the biggest Bellator stars. They brought him to Japan. If I had to take a guess, and I haven't heard this, I need to watch Scott Coker's if they ask him, like his press conference. Ryzen stepped up and said, "All right, we're gonna give you our lightweight champion to save the show." That's a big fight for Patricky. However, think about this. You're asking your champion, one of the stars of your company, to take a short notice fight against a guy who's had a full camp. You know what the odds are going in now. And quite bluntly, Bellator Ryzen is a couple times a year. Ryzen every month has to promote events. I think they said, look, there's a good chance our guy loses. It's freaking 5 days' notice for crying out loud. If we're gonna give you our guy, We need you to put some skin in the game. They probably asked him, hey, we could give you our champion, but give us Patricio. Put Patricio Pitbull in there against somebody. That way it's, I don't want to say evens out, but evens out.
Yeah.
If I had to take a guess, because I'm sure he was going to be there for Patricky. Yes, Patricio Diz. But I just, it doesn't seem to be smart business to put your featherweight goat coming off a loss in a 5-day notice fight. So I don't know any other reason why Bellator would have chosen to make the second move, if you know what I mean. What about you?
Yeah, I don't, it doesn't make sense, and now it's just hurting the, his brand, but it could also just be like they just seem like the kind of dudes that are like, nah, we got this, let's go. Like they're not thinking about the bigger picture because they're just fighter, not, I don't say just disparagingly, but like they're fighters at their core and they want to, I don't know, put on a show. Like I feel like Bellator didn't have too much sway in this one. I think Patricio was up for it, and that was it. That's my feeling.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think he would have taken it had he didn't feel like, well, I've been training, I did a camp with him, I can do this, I could get it done. However, I do think there was a little bit of, business behind the scenes and said, hey, we're asking you to step up for us, etc., etc., and, well, what else can we say? On the results, I mean, look, now you take Patricio completely off the board. I really want him to take a break following that loss. I don't know if Kyoji and Makoto Shinryu, my apologies if I messed up the name. I don't know if you run it back or if you find another flyweight for Kyoji and you try to get that done relatively quick. Let's get him back in there by September, something like that. But you got to do something, right? So, I don't know what they're looking to do. I'd hate to say that maybe they wait for another New Year's Eve Bellator Ryzen to run it back, but I don't know. I mean, that's all business behind the scenes. Patricky moves on to the semifinals. He now meets Alexander Shubley. And then Usman Nurmagomedov meets Brent Primus. Remember, Usman fought Benson Henderson way back in March. It's about to be August tomorrow. The entire tournament pacing, I'm sorry, it's just abysmal. And I only say that because it's like some guys are just getting the short end of the stick on the schedule. And I know that's not. Bellator isn't doing this on purpose. I think it's the lesser of two evils because you're trying to schedule all these vets and young guys, but I think that. At the end of the day, all the fans and the fighters are losing a little bit, having all these awkwardly long layoffs between the fights of a tournament. What do you think?
Yeah, it's been the critique since the beginning where I know, COVID disrupted some of that flow, but tournament just still means a consistent pace. Reliable, intervals of fights, and it's never been that with the Bellator Grand Prix. It's always, start, stop, delay, extend, and then you're like, oh, that's still going on? They didn't finish that yet? And then, 4 months later, it's the finale. It's like, oh, okay, like they haven't done enough to stitch it together. It doesn't feel like one entity, like one tournament. It just feels like different parts of a tournament that, I mean, it's just abysmal is the right word. It really is. And I don't know, like every time we talk about Bellator now, I still have it in the back of my mind if, about the PFL rumor. And I'm kind of still hoping that that comes to pass because I think that would be good for the top fighters at Bellator to be part of an organization that's doing things in a really sort of modern, thoughtful, exciting way. I think Bellator maybe has gotten a little relaxed.
I do think they need some kind of overhaul in things. And I'll say this. I don't know if that's, like the next tournament, you don't care how long you gotta wait before you put it on. You just slam the brakes and you say, "We're not. Everyone's gonna fight the same night, and everyone's gonna. F we're gonna all. Everyone's on the same schedule. We're not gonna do this. You fight in March in the first round. You fight in July in the first round. What are we doing here, guys? That can't happen anymore. I think, once again, I know they're capable of it, and I don't know if there's just too much MMA and combat sports going on. I mean, you have PFL, UFC, boxing, influencer boxing. If you're talking about WWE, I don't know, but it's like, I know they have great talent. They have a solid roster, especially with champions, that I'm just a little shocked at how this has all played out for them this year, you know?
But
It
even
just.
since before that, but yes.
I mean, look, ebb and flow. Obviously, look, I'm not saying, oh, they do this, they're on the UFC level. No, I'm not saying that.
No.
But how there's been so much ebb and not enough flow is shocking, you know? I think that's how it works, right? Or is it flow and ebb?
Ebb
I
and
don't know.
flow.
Okay, yeah. Well, I know that's how you say it, but it's like the flow is when it comes back, the ebb is when it goes backward. It's like, wait, I said
Yes,
it
correct. Ebb
right.
is the receding
Yeah,
of the
just
water.
checking.
The
Say,
flow is
wait.
when
It's like,
it.
wait a second. Anyway, not for nothing, PFL comes back this week. The playoffs, featherweights, light heavyweights, Bubba Jenkins taking on Jesus Pinedo, who knocked out Brendan Loughnane first round and took his spot in the playoffs. Brendan Loughnane is out, so you kind of have the Cinderella story in the main event. The light heavyweights, I think the most notable thing is champ. The champ is out due to failing a drug test, not in the Vegas stuff, but the fact is he's out. Natalie, all I'll say is that I know that PFL, this isn't something from an organizational standpoint. You had a lot of athletes kind of let him down, right, with all the drug tests. That being said, you now are in a position where you kind of gotta pitch a perfect one to get the hype back in it for the playoffs. Everyone's gonna be ready for Ngannou. Everyone's gonna be ready for all this and that. But I think you want people to be invested in Bubba and Pinedo. You gotta start running these promos. You gotta let the fans know what they got to see. You gotta remind them. I think they're fighting on a Thursday, for crying out loud. Or Wednesday. Sorry, not even Thursday. I gotta check that. I thought I saw Wednesday. My point is, you gotta really send it, because I think that's the only way, after everything that's happened, you get fans invested in the non-Ngannou Jake Paul fighters. You know what I mean?
And I actually feel like, here I am criticizing Bellator and praising PFL, but why am I excited about PFL? Because of Ngannou and still thinking about Kayla Harrison.
By the way, it's on
But
Friday. My bad, guys.
okay. But yeah, like with this drug testing thing, like that's besides signing Francis Ngannou, the biggest news story they've had is half our roster popped for drugs. And that's not a great thing, right? So the good thing for them is that they are below the radar enough just because of the dominance of UFC that it's not going to stain them as much as it would have if, half the UFC roster popped for something. So yeah, how do they make this exciting? How do they keep us interested? Yeah, start shooting promos or posting promos. I don't know. I don't know what they're going to do because the biggest problem with PFL, like at least with Bellator, we know these guys. These are bigger names than most of the PFL fighters, with the exception of Ngannou, Harrison, and then the folks that came over from the UFC that didn't do very well. But who was it? Pettis, Marais, McDonald. Did Werdum go too?
Yeah, he split from them.
But so. Those were still the biggest names in the PFL roster. They're trying to build up their guys, and some of them are popping. Like Clay Collard's is good, and what's that other guy?
Shane Burgos? I
Shane
mean, that
Burgos.
was a whole thing too, right?
Yeah, that was a whole thing too. So in any case, their biggest names are still not coming from PFL within PFL yet, and that takes time. So. Keep working to keep to hold our interest, to remind us of what's happening, and don't let this drug test thing continue to be the biggest story of PFL behind Ngannou.
Yeah, I think, like I said, you just gotta really pitch it, you really gotta frame it, and you just gotta hope the fights pop off. And then, I think like Amber Leibrock getting the head kick, and then suddenly it's like, oh, wait, we got some parity at featherweight without Kayla Harrison to rival Pacheco right now in the tournament. Little stuff like that adds up. And so you just kinda gotta hope they pop off as well. So, yeah, I'm sure they'll figure that out. Two fight nights. Obviously, we've had a long show, so I'm gonna breeze right into it. Rob Font, Corey Sandhagen. High stakes for Corey. Really big for Rob Font to potentially jump back into the title picture. Very technical guy against a very dynamic guy. And not that Corey doesn't have the fundamentals as well, but I think a lot more of his game revolves around that really, unorthodox, He's so long and rangy, and he uses those weapons, right? Spin, jump, kicks, knees, elbows, punches, a lot more than just the basic, he uses all eight limbs, let's put it that way. Rob Font, a lot more conventional, very technical, keeps everything in the chamber, works from a, great conditioning, solid all around, tough guy, tough to put away. In all, a very good fight. Rob Font obviously cuts his training camp by a lot because he stepped in. He was going to fight, I believe it was Song Yadong in Boston. Obviously, Corey was preparing for a wrestler, Umar Nurmagomedov. So, now moving to a striker, it's like they both get a handicap on short notice, right? So, I think that's something to acknowledge. Like I said, high stakes for the division when you look at where Corey is at. Fun fight. I'll go ahead and give it though. I think that the fact that Corey has had a longer training camp and he would have been looking to use his striking when he was with Umar anyway, I think that helps him. I just think the better training camp just favors him because he was already the more dynamic guy. So I have Corey Sandhagen. I'm gonna go second round TKO. What about you?
Yeah, I definitely have Corey Sandhagen for, same reasons. Just all around better, more diverse MMA fighter. Not to take anything away from Rob Font, but Corey Sandhagen puts it all together nicely, plus the lengthy advantage, and he's just trickier, more flow. I also think he'll win TKO. I was actually going to go round two as well, so I'm not going to change it. So we're on the same page here.
Any more to add about the fight? Just because I do know I kind of flew right through that one.
Nah, man, you know what? All respect to these two guys, but there's another fight we want to talk about too, and that's the one I'm thinking
Let's go.
about.
Not for nothing, Tatiana Suarez, Jessica Andrade in the co-main event.
Oh, shoot. Okay.
Big one for Tatiana. Tatiana wins. I mean, Yan Shannan looks so good, but Tatiana could be right there with her in the strawweight division. You know what I mean? Especially with Rose moving up, so, and then Jessica coming off the knockout loss, this is like, okay, this is gonna be, this is something. So I want to acknowledge that one. That's another good one on Saturday night. But I think a lot of fans are gonna be talking to see, they're waiting to see Jake Paul, Nate Diaz. They're such different personalities, and yet we didn't get it. And I watched Nate's interview with ESPN. He said, "I'm just doing my thing. I don't care about selling pay-per-views and all that," which I found a little like, bro, this is kind of the point of the job. But okay, his call. What's a good way to put this? I think that the hype. I would have told you the hype is better than the fight. Now the fight needs to be better than the hype. As
Yeah.
crazy as that is to say about Jake Paul and Nate Diaz, but that's exactly what we got. We got zero hype, and now you kind of need a good fight to make up for it. Otherwise, it's going to feel like they just. What did we do, guys? Jake is bigger. Jake focuses a lot more on his boxing. Nate admitted himself it's kind of boxing for MMA, even though he always brings in great boxers to train with. I think. You gotta acknowledge youth, you gotta acknowledge size, you gotta acknowledge height, you gotta acknowledge just very blunt knockout power. I think that what Nate is able to do with 4 ounce gloves is very different than what Jake has been able to do with, 10, 12 ounce gloves. all of that really does make a difference. Now, going back to it on a technical level, I think that it's really about patience and precision for Jake. I think that if you find yourself, I'll say this, I don't think you should wait for Nate Diaz. I think that Jake wins the fight every time if he doesn't wait for Nate. I think if he starts getting patient, starts trying to pick and pop with one shot, that's when a guy like Nate may be able to break into the conversation and start putting things together. But if Jake stays on him, I have a hard time seeing a scenario where Jake doesn't just handle this. What about you?
I agree. Yeah, I mean, look, you, I don't need to tell you, I don't even need to say it. There's no MMA fan in the world rooting for Jake Paul in this matchup, right? We were all rooting for, whether you liked Woodley or Askren, you were still rooting for him. Of course, Silva, we were all rooting for Silva, and we're all going to root for Nate Diaz, but you laid it out perfectly. Every advantage is in Jake Paul's corner: size, speed, power, height. But Nate Diaz is, what does he have in his corner? What's his advantage? He's freaking Nate Diaz. That's him. And I think what we're guaranteed to see is Nate Diaz not quitting. Nate Diaz is gonna punch Jake Paul as much as he can. That's a terrible way to describe a fight, to break down a fight. But Nate Diaz is gonna be Nate Diaz, right? He'll be in his face, laughing at him, trying to intimidate him, to distract him. When he lands a couple of punches with those long arms, were they going to hurt Jake Paul? Probably not. Nate Diaz has always been a volume puncher. That's been his game. Has he ever knocked anybody out? Maybe, I don't know, one or two people. Most of his wins in MMA were by submission. Obviously, not an option here. I think Nate Diaz still has a heck of a chin, but Jake Paul, for all you want to say about the guy, does have power and does have enough skill to be able to land a punch, a knockout punch on Nate Diaz. God help us, I do not want to see that. That would be terrible. It was bad enough to see him knock down Anderson Silva. What the heck is Nate Diaz going to do with his life if he gets knocked out by Jake Paul? I mean, I don't know.
Like he low-key loses that BMF cred, right?
Right. And
Like
so,
after
yeah.
all that, and it's like, bro, you let Bizardvark over here beat
I
you.
know, man. And so, yeah, going back to the hype, when we first heard about this matchup, when it was official, half of the excitement was, man, these interviews are going to be crazy. The lead up is going to be amazing. Jake Paul himself said he is so disappointed that Nate Diaz hasn't stepped up on the mic. That it's just been boring and disappointing. And that's not typical of Nate Diaz. So I asked myself, is that for a reason? Is he trying to trick everybody into thinking he's not going to be up for this fight? Or did he just not feel like talking the day that the press conference was scheduled, the day that he interviewed with whoever on ESPN or in some podcast? Is he just not feeling like doing his shtick? I don't know. Nate Diaz doesn't back down in a fight. He's going to be in there doing his thing. I just don't see how he wins this one, and it hurts my heart to say that out loud.
So remember, what's the goal of every when they say, oh, this is on pay-per-view, well, what's the point? To sell pay-per-views. There are other ways to watch fights, and we acknowledge this, but I'll say this. They're having this fight after a big two big fights. You're having after the fight in boxing and UFC. So both the boxing fans and the UFC fans just spent over $60. Possibly twice, if you wanted to watch them both in high definition. And you're telling me they didn't do any talking? I'm sorry, but if you are a paying fan, you probably already spent your money for combat sports this last 2 weeks. And I think that, put it this way, I think a lot of people are going to be disappointed. And we talked at the top of the show, I saw it getting promoted on Fight TV. I couldn't find it on the website. But a friend sent this to me, and it's like, are the pre-sales for this fight that bad? Are they trending that bad that Fight made a, you know, DAZN made a deal with Fight TV just to try to get more eyeballs on this, like to try to get more sales out of it in general, because overall, the fact that there's been so little smoke, no fire, is like, I don't know that fans are about to crack open their checkbook again in the spur of the moment for this. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and they would have if there had been some, thrilling, nail-biting video of the two of them, going off at each other on the microphone. Or have they done a, I guess there's still a stare down still coming, right? So
Yeah, this
there's
week.
still time for Diaz to step it up. You know, Jake Paul is going to be trying to get under his skin just to get that content, right? He wants to create content that can be pushed in the days before the fight to try and up the numbers. So Diaz is either going to rise to the occasion and be a good dance partner, or he's going to say, "No, screw you. I'm not your monkey. You want to try and put on a show? That's not me. Too bad." We'll see.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's gonna be one to watch, so they'll figure it out. I think that I mean no choice around it. I'll leave it at that. They're gonna figure it out, but yeah, anything less than a very, 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 very good fight week, I think it's only gonna translate into bad pay-per-view sales. So yeah, for them, for everyone involved who's a fan, I hope they find that magic, you know, that magic in a bottle, and they use it to get it done. Natalie, we've had a long show. We do still have more MMA coming up next week, though. Vicente Luque, Rafael dos Anjos, welterweight. RDA said he's done at lightweight. Both of these guys are so nice. They're both very good. You know, RDA, he's kind of that guy. I'm done when I say I'm done. I always hope he has a good showing. Vicente Luque is a fun fighter to watch, so. Yeah, I mean, the only note I have is fun main event. A lot to like about it. Two nice guys. What about you?
Yeah, I mean, I haven't given it a whole lot of thought just because coming off of BMF and what's coming up next. So, yeah. That should be the poster. Two nice guys are fighting.
What's wrong with them being nice, man? It's people like nice people, you
They
know? There are
do,
there who wants to be around a jerk? Come on.
yeah. Yeah, no, of course not. Yeah.
Anyway, guys, thank you for listening. Remember, like, comment, subscribe. We'll be back next week.